Hello, Radioland. Welcome to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. Thank you for joining us on this beautiful October day. I am joined today by another very special guest. I'd like to welcome to the show a mother of two vaccine-injured children who is herself an RN. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I am doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm glad to do it.
So on this show, we've covered a variety of topics. Listeners of the show may be familiar with a lot of our broadcasts being about chronic pain, because right now, people in chronic pain are facing an extremely dire situation where the medicine that they need for quality of life is being demonized and turned into the new cash cow prohibition. So we've done many shows about that. We've done some shows about cannabis, and now we're doing vaccine injuries. It is a topic that we have discussed on the show before, and one that I would like to discuss further, because one of the things I started to see in my experience being a partner of a chronic pain patient is how so many different groups, let's say, like you have people who want choice when it comes to vaccines. You got people who are pro-choice for abortion. And then, you know, all of these people are asking for the same thing. We're really just asking for one thing. And that is medical freedom, that when we walk into a healthcare facility, they recognize that we are the owners of our bodies, the definite experts in our own bodies, and we should be listened to and obeyed.
Absolutely, and we should be free.
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to say, no, that doesn't work for me, or no, this is, you know, we've had bad reactions to this before.
Mm-hmm.
Most certainly, we should not be treated or as if we're, quote, crazy or brushed off or any of the things that do happen with, you know, mothers like me and patients like your significant other who do have chronic pain syndromes. We all deserve to be healthy or to be at our healthiest. And sometimes our needs are unique in order to maintain that level of health, and we should be listened to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, Carolyn, I know you mentioned to me that you are a mother of two vaccine-injured children. First, let me say I'm very sorry that happened to your children. Please let me express my condolences for you and your family and what you've been going through. And you mentioned that you're an RN. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of the background, maybe what your views on vaccines were originally and
so
what you've learned since then?
Originally, I was very much pro-vax. Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense to me why anyone wouldn't want to, you know, you give a kid a shot and they don't get sick.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed so simple. And in nursing school, we were taught that vaccines are incredibly safe. And yeah, there are reactions, but most typically it's just, you know, redness and swelling at the injection site, which happens with any type of shot you give at times. It made sense. Give the kid a shot, they won't get sick. Even the convenience factor of not having a sick child, that in and of itself was mm-hmm. enough for me to think this is a good thing. And again, we were taught they were safe.
Yep. It really seems an easy sell to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, the idea of just going in, you get a little prick and some dreadful disease is now a non-threat. It's a really great idea.
Absolutely. I love the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, chicken pox, you're not going to die from the chicken pox. That's not a deadly disease.
Mm-hmm.
But it was uncomfortable. You know, you do feel like you have 1,000 mosquito bites. It'll keep you out of school and mom or dad home from work for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, the lack of interruption for your, you know, regular schedule is really enough to think, hey, this is a good idea. And when you're told it's safe, you expect it to be.
Right. I know myself, I had a weird reaction to a vaccine. When I had to take the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella, crazy combo vaccine, to go into college, I was like basically like blanked out, standing on my feet.
The same, similar happened to my husband. He actually turned blue. They wouldn't let him come home. He had two shots. Same thing. He was going to college. He was a returning student. We already had children. And his physician wouldn't let him go home right away because he turned blue. And he just kind of felt spacey and dizzy and like he was going to pass out. Mm-hmm. And he ended up rebounding quickly and he was fine. And we never thought anything of it. And that was years before we had kids who were got injured, and many, many years before we even realized that the first of our children who was injured had an actual vaccine injury.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to put your finger on. And also, the medical establishment doesn't seem to want to research this or develop anything further. There is such a strong resistance.
There is. And we couldn't even get our children diagnosed. And in order to obtain appropriate treatment, you need a diagnosis. You need to understand what you're working with. Our middle child, Lily, her vaccine injury occurred in September of 2008. We discovered that her issues were vaccine related in December of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later. Now, when she had the reaction to the vaccine, do you want me to tell this story now?
Certainly you can, as long as you're comfortable sharing with me and our listening audience.
Absolutely. I genuinely think it's a story worth telling. First of all, with Lily, when we got to the hospital to have her, her heart wasn't beating right. She was in a cardiac arrhythmia. She was in a supraventricular tachycardia. She converted prior to delivery. I had an emergency C-section because of that. And she was born healthy and lovely, and she was followed by children's cardiology for the first 3 years of her life. Now, when she was initially born, she got her the vitamin K shot, and I refused the Hep B. That's what it was. I refused the Hep B because I didn't have hepatitis. I didn't have Hep B. She was being, there was literally no chance of exposure for this child. And it seemed like it was an unnecessary injection to a teeny tiny baby. And it just didn't seem like the right thing to do to me. It actually seemed kind of cruel.
Yeah.
So after being seen by children's, you know, we refused the Hep B. She was seen by children's cardiology. Her cardiologist explained to me that she could convert back into SVT. And if she did so, it would be a medical emergency. And some of the things that could cause her to convert back into SVT were pain, trauma, illness. And I immediately thought of the injections that she got, or she was going to get at her pediatrics appointments. And, you know, babies kind of turn red and purple when they get these shots. They really hurt.
Yeah.
I knew, now I had been, I'd worked in a cardiac med-surg unit prior to getting pregnant with Lily. And I knew, and I don't mean to sound, I don't even know what the word is. I don't mean to sound snobby or uppity or anything, but I knew that the team at the pediatric office, they're not ready for a newborn in SVT. They're not ready for a code. I'm not coding my child. This is exactly what I thought. I am not coding my child. I'm not putting her in the back of the car and having her convert and me not know until I go to take her out.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I declined all vaccines. I said, we'll do it. Let's get her further away from the arrhythmia. And her pediatrician talked me into taking some of them. So we gave her two at a time. And we did that throughout her life. I was working weekends. I had the time to take her back. So we just spread them out. Now, when she was 9 months old, we were going down the Cape. And I thought she might have an ear infection, or like the early stages of an ear infection. She just had a virus. But I took her in to the doctors and had a sick visit. And during that visit, she got two shots. She fell asleep, stayed sleeping until we got to the Cape. And initially, you know, kids get sleepy from vaccines, so initially I didn't worry.
Mm-hmm.
At some point that weekend, I realized she was really sleepy. She was actually lethargic, and lethargy is a neurological symptom.
Yeah.
So I called the pediatrician's office. It's a Sunday. I call the doctor's office. We're down the Cape, so we're pretty far away from Children's Boston.
By the way, for our listening audience who's in Columbia, Greene Counties of New York, can you state your location?
We're in South Shore, Massachusetts.
Okay, because here, like, Cape means, like, Cape Cod or...
Yes, that's where we were. We were down the Cape Cod.
Oh, I thought you were from... I might be confusing you with another person, but you're not in Washington?
No, we're in... We're in Massachusetts.
You're in Massachusetts. Oh, so you're our neighbor right across the border. So you're actually you're actually in our listening area, which is the Berkshire Hills.
Oh, cool. So we go down the Cape. I identify this child as having a neurological reaction. I call the doctor. Where do we go? Where do I take this child? Is there a pediatric ER around me? This was before the days that you could just pull up on your smartphone, you know? And they laughed. They said, this is completely normal. I said, no, this child is lethargic. This is not normal.
Yeah, there's nothing normal about that.
Absolutely not. She said, the nurse said, go ahead, take her to the ER. They're not going to do anything. As long as she has so many wet diapers a day, she's okay. So,
what?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I should have just done what I wanted to do anyways and take her to the ER, but I didn't. You know, you don't want to take a kid to the ER if you don't have to. And I know a lot of weird things about my own specialties and the things that I've worked in. And I've never worked in pediatrics. So I deferred against my better judgment. I deferred to the pediatric nurse's judgment. And I took Lily had her 9-month well visit 2 days later. So I took her in that day. And actually, they wanted me to give her more vaccines. And I said, no, absolutely not. The physician reassured me that this was completely normal. And of course they said, no, it's not. This isn't my first child. It's not normal. So at that point I declined vaccines and, we ended up continuing though. We continued to give her vaccines. Now at 9 months, her well baby visit, her assessment was completely normal. She weighed 20 pounds at 9 months. She was standing, like pulling herself up. She was crawling. Mm-hmm. When you compare that to her, hold on, let me flip back. You compare Lily's 9-month appointment to her 12-month appointment, and now she's not crawling. She's not standing.
Oh my
she's
gosh.
Scootering around. She's lost language. She's head banging. And she had been admitted. She had developed hand, foot, mouth, and had been admitted to South Shore Hospital, which is in Weymouth, and they have a PDER. On arrival to South Shore Hospital, she was roughly 12 months old, and she weighed just over 17 pounds. She had lost almost 3 pounds. Now, this was despite my absolute best efforts. She was still a breastfed baby, but at that point, she had started refusing everything else by mouth. She had been difficult to feed to begin with. Not to begin with, but... Since probably 2 or 4 months, so since she was itty bitty. But she went from this chubby, healthy baby to quite thin. And like I said, a 3-pound weight loss on a 20-pound baby, that's huge.
Yeah.
She didn't regain her 9-month weight until she was, I'm not sure it was 15 or 19 months old, but it took her a while to get back up to those 20 pounds. Now, from that point, we got her into early intervention. At one point, they questioned an autism diagnosis on her. She was followed by a behavioral specialist, and it came up so many times. They were following her for so long that eventually I demanded the diagnosis. I was like, just diagnose her and move on. Like, let's go. We can do autism. Let's just do it. But she wasn't autistic. She had some traits that were consistent with autism. Let's see, what else did she do? Oh, her only communication within a month or so, or maybe 2 months of those shots, was ow. She would say ow, and like I said, she would hit herself. So she required different types of therapies until she was 7 years old. Now, we had a very typical 9-month-old. She was picky eating, but nothing astronomical. And she went from that typical 9-month-old who was hitting all her milestones and doing quite well to a kid who now needs therapies, and for the next 6.5 years or so, she needed OT, PT, she needed vestibular therapy, she was in social groups, she needed sensory integration therapy. Did I say speech? But she, there was just so much. I used to joke that she was my $100,000 baby and worth every penny.
Aww.
It's not funny anymore, though.
No.
Not a good joke anymore. Now, if you fast forward to when my son Josh was born in 2013. So June of 2013, we have this beautiful little boy. And prior to his arrival, we had been told that he was high risk for trisomy 21 or trisomy 18. We elected to do no further testing. We knew that we loved our son. We wanted him however God gave him to us. And so if he had been autistic, we would have been okay with it.
Can we clarify a little bit what trisomy is?
So trisomy 21 is Down syndrome.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Trisomy 18 is a genetic abnormality, which unfortunately it's incompatible with life. So we knew that had he actually had trisomy 18, there was a chance that we would never hold him hold him alive or not have him for very long.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very accepting of the child that we were about to meet. And luckily he was born healthy. He was strong.
Oh,
he was beautiful. He was the easiest baby I ever had. Easiest delivery and easiest baby.
Nice.
He was happy as all get out all the time. He had the best belly laugh. Now, because of what happened to Lily,
mm-hmm,
when she was so little, I had refused to give my kids more than 2 shots at a time. But again, I'm still vaccinating them.
Mm-hmm.
They're still getting what they need. Yes, it's delayed. They're not going to daycare. I'm home Monday through Friday. My husband's home on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I worked that alternative schedule because I had the opportunity to. As a nurse, you can do that. And I wanted to raise my children, you know, which obviously working mothers do too, and most certainly I was, but you know, we had the opportunity to do it, so we did. The kids were vaccinated. No, it wasn't the exact schedule that they should have been, but with Josh, what happened was, because we were giving him 2 at a time and it was an alternative schedule, he received the DTaP at, I want to say he was about 7 months, where he was a June baby. His 6-month appointment was delayed just because of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we got it at 7 months. He got his third DTaP. And then at 8.5 months or so, he got a fourth, which was a med error. He shouldn't have gotten that.
Ooh.
Now, after that accidental DTaP, he broke out in this horrible rash. And at first, I didn't identify that it was eczema. This wasn't like a little patch of eczema. This was his whole body. He had it on his cheeks. It started on his bottom. And then behind his knees were just atrocious. Nothing worked on this eczema. Absolutely, we could not treat this eczema until another mom, she was actually a foster mom, told me about wet wrapping. That worked for him. But after that accidental DTaP, Josh had been evaluated by early intervention. We have 3 baby boys. Josh's age were born into the family, obviously, at the same time. My 2 sisters had baby boys right around the time we had Josh. And his cousin, and Josh and his cousin, we wanted to put them in this play group just for fun. And in order to go to this play group, they had to be evaluated by EI. So Josh, mm-hmm, is evaluated by EI. He does not qualify for services, which is absolutely no surprise to us because we know we have a normal, typical, healthy baby boy. Now, once that happens, I get a phone call from the doctor's office. Josh is ineligible for services. We have to cancel his 1-year appointment. And I said, no, he's not. I've had the same job for, you know, at that point, I think it was 6 years or 7 years. We haven't had any insurance changes in years. He's ineligible for services. No, well, let me rebook it then. And I called the insurance company. I said, look, they're saying he's ineligible for services. I know he's not. They say, absolutely, he's completely eligible, especially well baby checkups. Mm-hmm. We would never, those are always covered. In any event, The doctors eventually call me and they say, you know, he's late for his 12-month visit.
I hate to stop you at this very point, but we've only got a couple seconds left to the segment. So to our listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in. We're talking with Carolyn today. Thank you, Carolyn, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome, Radio Land, to the Medical Freedom Show. You are listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM, your community radio station. This is Heather Martin, and you are listening to the Medical Freedom Show. Today, I am speaking with Carolyn, who is an RN nurse and a mother of two children. Is it two or three that were?
Well, I have three, but two were injured. One tolerated everything fine.
Okay, so a mother of two children who were injured by vaccines, and she has been sharing with me this really heartbreaking story. I mean, as I'm just listening to this, you know, I feel for you. As mother who's, you know, you've got a very important and stressful job being an RN, and then to have two children who start out healthy and normal, and through the course of these vaccines, you watch their condition deteriorate. And I mean, that's just got to be so heartbreaking. I mean, it's heartbreaking to listen to. And unfortunately, this is a scenario that so many parents are going through right now.
And it's not supposed to happen. This isn't supposed to happen. These kids are supposed to be able to do just fine. With Joshua, he went in for his 15-month appointment.
That's your son, your third born.
That's right, my youngest. He was, mm-hmm. you know, 15 months old, and it was a late one-year appointment. And it he got several vaccines. Now, at that time, he was behind, and I never really had a child who was behind on their vaccines. And again, that was because his 12-month appointment was canceled. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on my end. So, and he had been
right. It was in that winter, the holiday season.
Well, he had been seen several times, mm-hmm. and they didn't bring up vaccines. He'd been seen on several sick visits. So when he went in, it was September, I think it was the 24th, 2014, I took him in, and he got several vaccines. He got the HIB, PCV13, IPV, and half of a flu dose shot. And that's when things really started to unravel for our family. Mm-hmm. And his symptoms were subtle. They were so subtle, I didn't understand what was happening. And by the time I knew we were in trouble with him, it was so far away from those vaccines. It was between that 4 and 6 week mark that, you know, he started having seizures and went from just looking ill, and we thought, you know, he was maybe teething, but all of a sudden he's incredibly withdrawn. We kind of watched our son's personality disintegrate over the matter of very few short weeks. It was absolutely devastating, but at that point, we still just thought he was sick. His symptoms, we couldn't explain. He had so many strange symptoms that really weren't connected. You know, you have a kid with a cold and you expect to see a sore throat, a stuffy nose, maybe an earache, a headache. And it's all in the, you know, it all makes sense. He had GI symptoms. His balance was off. His coordination was poor. He was falling. He was passing out. And then, like I said, he had a seizure. He actually had two. At that point, I knew this was neurological in origin. There was one day I actually, he was doing this thing, which I didn't identify what it was at the time. It's called opisthotonus. At first, so he's arcing his back and arcing his neck. So it looks like he's trying to touch the back of his head to the back of his heels. He's throwing himself backwards onto the floor. And I'm trying to hold him up. And initially I'm like, oh, well, he's having a tantrum. You know, at this point, he's 16 months old. He's starting the terrible twos mm-hmm. early. Maybe his head hurts. And eventually, that day, I started, oh, my God, this is meningitis. I think he has meningitis. I got to get him to the ER.
Yeah, wow.
And our pediatrician, their policy was call us before you take the child to the ER. So I call. I say, I'm taking my son to the ER. I think he has meningitis. I should never have made that phone call. They talked me into bringing him into the doctor's office. I explained to the physician what I had been seeing. He's got this terrible high-pitched scream. And we discuss, you know, does he need to go to the ER? Does he need a spinal tap? Like, and things that you really don't want to do to your child, you know?
Right, yeah.
And I remember her saying, you know, if you bring him, he doesn't need to go to the ER. And if you bring him, they're just going to torture him with a spinal tap. And of course, oh my God, I don't want to do that. But I remember thinking that might be necessary. Like, this is serious. This is not a normal bug or flu or whatever. And they said he just has a stomach bug. He's fine. And the way I was treated, I felt like I was being an over-concerned nurse mom. I knew too much, I'd seen too many bad things happen type of thing. And, you know, you worry about the worst case.
Yeah, there's
scenario.
A real prejudice against patients who know too much.
That's it. And I mean, everybody's heard, oh, you know, Dr. Google. But in this situation, I was really made to feel somewhat paranoid. And so we took him home. And now I had called my mother to come with me because I couldn't get him in the car seat. So this was severe. And I really, and this is part of the thing that I struggled with much later. I didn't do what I should have done. I should have called 911. I'm a nurse. I should have known. And I did know. But again, I defer to the specialists. I'm not a pediatric anything, you know. But it was painful for me later because had he been my patient, I feel like I would have advocated more strongly. But because I was his mother, and I'd always said, I'll never treat my children. I'll never try to diagnose my children. I do think that in some instances.
Yeah, it puts you in kind of an awkward position in that sense, too.
And I should have. On this particular day, I should have, because we lost the opportunity to make a diagnosis on him. Now, 2 months after that September set of shots, we took him back in for his 18-month appointment. Now, he's only 17 months old at the time. And he got another set of shots. And I remember saying to the doctor, are you sure we should do this? I don't think we should do this. Mm-hmm. Last time we gave him shots, all heck broke loose. And she said, Carolyn, he needs this now more than ever. So we gave him the shots. And so that was, I want to say, November 25th-ish, 2014. And by December 11th, 2014, he was completely nonverbal. He came home, he slept for 3 days. And I remember thinking, you know, he was crying at first. He started screaming in the doctor's office, fell asleep in the car. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so glad because he's not in pain. He's comfortable. I thought he'd sleep it off. He went through the same thing that his sister had done, the 3 days. Now, every time we vaccinated either child, I brought up Lily was lethargic after being vaccinated. And because they'd argue with me, they'd want me to give the full set. No, we're not giving the full set. Pick your two favorite. You can do those and we'll come back later for the other two. So this is over a course of years. It's been kind of drilled in and reviewed so many times that this is okay that this happens that, again, I didn't respond. I should have taken him to the hospital. I should have gotten better health care for him, and I didn't. I let him sleep it off. And he cried. And when he woke up, he cried for, I want to say, 6 months in that high-pitched, what I now know to be a DTaP scream. I didn't know then.
DTaP, you know? Scream.
Yeah.
So this is a known thing.
It's known. It is known. Now, once that happened, of course I'm saying it's the vaccines. We can't vaccinate this child anymore. It's absolutely the vaccines. And he's seen by neurology, he's seen by genetics, he's seen by immunology, and they all say that can't happen. And again, I'm treated in a way that I almost feel like I'm being paranoid, and I start questioning my own judgment. Now, at this point, his neurological symptoms are so severe that they decide to do an MRI to rule out a tumor, brain tumor. And I knew that's where we were headed. And I didn't fight to have that MRI done sooner, because I knew if he was diagnosed with a brain tumor, we wouldn't have a lot of good days left. And my goal, I literally started focusing on the quality of the life my son was going to have, because I didn't think the quantity was going to be there. I didn't think he was going to have a lot of good days left. I thought I was going to bury him. And you know what? Knowing what I know now, I can tell you that we're some of the lucky ones, because we didn't bury him.
Yeah.
And most certainly,
so glad to hear that.
Absolutely, we could have. Oh. And the signs were there. Medicine, you know, modern medicine, they don't identify vaccine injuries. Looking back,
right, all of this is considered anecdotal evidence. All of your experience is just anecdotal evidence and has no scientific merit. And that's what every vaccine injured parent is being told. Right. Like you say, it absolutely does.
It absolutely does.
And I find it really disturbing how little study is done, that these vaccines are made, approved, thrown out there to the public, and there's no follow-up. There's no monitoring of anyone who's taking a newly designed vaccine. And there really should be. There should be a lot more effort applied to this. And I like to say, you know, absolutely, I'm not anti-vax. I'm pro-vaccine choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because like we were talking about in the first segment, you know, it's a great idea. You know, if we can just immunize people against horrible diseases with a little shot, what a wonderful thing to be able to do. However, we're using technology that's about 100 years old and really in need of a lot of improvement and advancement that's not happening.
Now, the story, so I couldn't get Josh's medical records. There was another reaction that happened. He was going to be going to kindergarten. Now, in the meantime, they ruled out a brain tumor and Josh was diagnosed with autism. So he goes through same thing as Lily, ton of therapy. He had ABA 20 something hours a week. He had PT, OT, you know, social groups. He ended up at an ABA center, which was fabulous. They were just amazing. And, but I couldn't get his records. That's what happened. I couldn't get his records. He's going to kindergarten or preschool at the time. So I go in, I say, he needs his hep shot. And at this point, we changed physicians. He needs his hepatitis shot. I never got it for him. Same as Lily. I don't have hepatitis B. He was not at risk in any way, shape, or form. So it was pointless to give a newborn a hep B shot when he was never going to be exposed mm-hmm. to hep B. They end up giving him the hep A shot. And after they drew it up, I was like, all right, well, we'll just come back for the hep B shot later. You know, we live in an area where actually hep A is probably a good idea to not get, you know? Mm-hmm. So I let him have the shot. And then the second hep A shot, his ABA therapist pulled me aside and she said, Carol, his balance is off. His behavior is off. There were five things. And I don't remember the other three things off the top of my head, but I ended up taking him to the doctors and saying, look, this is what we're noticing, because I had seen it, but again, now I still think I'm kind of paranoid about this, and now we've been through so much, our whole family is traumatized, because the thing about his regression was we lost the child that we knew. Mm-hmm. The child that we had known for the, you know, first 15 months of his life just kind of melted away, and I mean, by the worst part of his regression, he didn't even look the same. He had been this pudgy, happy, healthy toddler who was completely rambunctious, and he morphed into this pale, sickly looking little boy who had dark circles under his eyes, and he just always seemed sick, and he was always in distress. He was always screaming and crying, and I couldn't comfort him except when I nursed him, and it was just absolutely devastating. So again, fast forward to the hep A vax, we notice a behavioral change and a subtle regression. And I take him to Boston Neurology. We actually have, it was Cell Shore, but it's through Boston Hospital and our Boston Children's, I'm sorry. And the NP who was following him, I told her, I actually gave her the list that his ABA therapist gave me. I wish I had asked for that back. But in any event, I gave her the list and I said, look, this is what we've noticed. And the only thing that's changed is we gave him the second Hep A vax. And she said, well, you know what? I think Josh might be sensitive to vaccines. And I said, okay, well, do me a favor. Make sure you document that because, you know, we may need to get a medical waiver for this child. You know, this is serious. This isn't the first or second or third or fourth vaccine-induced issue that we've had in our family. This is mm-hmm. the fifth. You know, we had Lily, and then Josh had the eczema, the two regressions, and then this third regression that, again, it's rather subtle, and the symptoms ended up resolving. But still, it was enough to kind of trigger me and say, nope, this is real.
Yeah.
This isn't me being paranoid. This is now inarguable. And his old pediatrician had a hard time getting his records from them. It took me a long time, which it shouldn't have. You know, HIPAA says you have 30 days to you know, give those people, the parents or whoever, the records. And it took a long time. So in order to protect my son's right to file a vaccine injury petition, I filed one. I filed one actually before I had the records, or before I had complete records. And once I did a chart review, in my mind, it was really inarguable. Now, he had an autism diagnosis, so we couldn't get a vaccine injury lawyer, but the vaccine injury lawyers that I spoke to, many of them were incredibly supportive. A few of them actually told me that since Omnibus Autism Proceedings, which I believe were in 07 or thereabouts, the vaccine injury court had told the vaccine injury attorneys not to bring them cases that include an autism diagnosis.
Wow.
Yes. So we literally, now in the beginning, I thought this was a very clear cut case. The child had received two vaccines at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And once we give him a bunch of them, he has this massive regression. It seems so obvious to me.
Yeah.
But it was very difficult to prove. And if I had the information that I have now, I think we maybe could have proven it. It was just, I wasn't familiar with the court system. My husband and I were doing this on our own. And it was kind of soul sucking.
Yeah, definitely.
A physician who, you know, it took me years to find out. I didn't understand the mechanisms of what happened. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't know what opposite tonus was. I told you that I knew what tetany was, but the picture in the book is an adult standing on his feet and his head, you know, bent in a U shape, backwards. And, that's not what my son was doing. His symptoms were intermittent and it looked like he was trying to touch his heels, the back of his heels, the back of his head. Mm-hmm. So, I just didn't know. And I thought I knew. So as we went through the vaccine injury case, I stumbled and fumbled through it, but eventually we happened across two physicians who really helped us. One of them was, in functional med, and he was actually the one that explained to me how these vaccines injured my child. And, what he had explained was that, you know, if a child has what they would consider what would be typically a benign mitochondrial disorder, say he's maybe not making as much mitochondria as he typically would or as a typical child would, but he's making enough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
And we challenge his immune system by giving him the vaccines. Now, his immune system needs more energy than he's needed previously. So the demand for energy is greater. So the body starts pulling mitochondria from different systems. And the neurological system is so sensitive that, the neurological symptoms. I don't know if more severely is the word or sooner, but it was multisystemic. We saw it in his gut. His liver enzymes had elevated and he was having neurological symptoms. It affected his skin. So, we really had, it, once he explained that to me, I had a better understanding. And I still have my own curiosities. Like, was this...
Carolyn, I hate to cut you off at this point. We're in the last 10 seconds of this segment. Thank you so much for all that you are sharing with us about your story. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You're listening to Medical Freedom. Hello, Radio Land. This is the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin. Today, I am speaking with Carolyn, who is an RN and a mother who has had a harrowing experience with vaccines. Carolyn, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you in our last segment, but I do want to recap on what you were saying. You were describing when an actual doctor, for a while, you'd been getting a lot of these messages that it's all in your head, it's all imaginary, but then you finally had a doctor who sat with you and talked about the injuries your children had suffered. And I just want to recap that again for the listeners tuning in now. We're talking about the mitochondria.
So with what typically, and now this has been known for years that this can happen. This has been known, it was data collected in 2001. Now Merck had agreed with this, the CDC was aware. There was a physician named Dr. Zimmerman who actually had testified in the Omnibus Autism Proceedings. He had testified for the federal government against a young man or a child who he felt did not have autism related to vaccines. Of course, it doesn't cause every case of vaccination.
Right. And there's where some of that confusion comes in. Because some people say, oh, well, some people got autism without getting vaccines. Yep, but it doesn't mean that's the only vector for autism.
Of course. And now this gentleman retired, as of New Year's Day, 2018. And there was an affidavit that came out shortly after that in which he very blatantly stated, I notified the Department of Justice on this day that this can actually happen. And I've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. I was fired. This was a Friday. I was fired the following Monday. But they knew. The Department of Justice knew. The vaccine companies knew. I mean, I couldn't imagine that the Department of Justice knew and the vaccine injury courts didn't. They threw away like 4,000 cases after the omnibus mm-hmm. process.
It's a cover-up.
Well, it's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. If they knew that this could happen with children who had benign mitochondrial disorders...
Right, why aren't they screened?
Exactly. We screen for PKU. We do a heel prick on every baby born in a hospital mm-hmm. and in order to identify that. Now, we could have... They had enough time. They knew this mm-hmm. in 2007. Josh wasn't born until 2013. His injury was literally 7 years after the Department of Justice. Well, it was actually much, much longer than that, that it was known that these benign mitochondrial disorders combined with vaccination can cause autism-like symptoms. And autism-like symptoms that result in autism versus autism-like symptoms, is there a difference if the resulting diagnosis is the same? Absolutely not.
Not to the patient, not to the person suffering it.
Nope, and not to the parents who, just mm-hmm. like us, feel like they lost their child. And again, we were lucky. Now I know that with these benign mitochondrial disorders, one, they knew about it. They knew that we could result, administering vaccinations the way we're doing it, could result in autism. Autism-like symptoms, autism, whatever, however you want to address mm-hmm. that. And, you know, regressive autism. Neurological injury or regressive encephalopathy, mm-hmm. which is what I do believe my son had. And in fact, in December of this year, I had been talking, of 2018, I'd been speaking with a vaccine injury attorney. And she said, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't take your son's case, but I would have taken your daughter's. And I was like, excuse me?
What?
She said, your daughter's case, because she had asked me why I broke up the vaccines and I explained to her what happened to Lily. Your daughter's case would have been settled out of court. We would have taken your daughter's. She said, look at the vaccine injury table. That's classic regressive encephalopathy. And that's when I really started looking at Lily's chart or medical records, and that's when I realized at 9 months she was a typical baby, and at 12 months she, now they had told me they had identified or diagnosed her with a developmental delay, which isn't 100% wrong, but it's not really accurate. She had a developmental regression. A developmental regression is a loss of skills. Mm-hmm. Loss of developmental skills, which is what happened with both of these children. But had Lily's regressive encephalopathy and post-vaccination regression been identified, we could have stopped there. Josh's did not have to happen. And there is no recourse. Absolutely nobody is responsible. The physicians that did not identify this, not responsible. The vaccine that manufactured, the vaccine manufacturers that produced the vaccinations, not responsible. Nobody is responsible. Nobody cares.
Yeah, there's no accountability. There's
zero.
Yeah.
Now, Congress had passed that law in 1986, alleviating liability from the vaccine manufacturers. And the thing about medicine that I've learned is without the threat of liability or financial consequence, there will be no change. These manufacturers knew they had absolutely no reason to do any research, because if your kid or my kid or anybody else's is hurt, it doesn't matter to them. They have no financial consequence. Mm-hmm. The research would have cost them millions to identify children who couldn't use their product. There was no reason or no desire for them to find kids who couldn't use their product. That's counterproductive.
Not good business.
Their profit. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and some of these
shoot them all, let God sort them out. That's the approach they're taking here.
Yeah, and now we're seeing mandated vaccines. I know in New York, you guys are now mandated. California, they're now mandated.
Yeah.
And with no regards, Robert Kennedy won. Do you follow him at all?
I'm familiar with him.
It's worth following the work that he's doing, in my opinion. He won a court case in 2018, which under the Freedom of Information Act. Now, the vaccine manufacturers were supposed to submit safety studies every 2 years. They didn't. And what was discovered is once he won that lawsuit, what came out was they didn't have any safety studies. There weren't any safety studies to be reviewed. So in 2018, it legally comes out that there are no safety studies. And in 2019, California mandates vaccines that have never been proven safe. Mm-hmm. And now there's a bill in the State House in Massachusetts that is banning removing religious exemption, amongst other things.
You know, now that you mention that, I just want to mention something. The name of this show, Medical Freedom, comes from one of the founding fathers of our country, a Dr. Benjamin Rush. He was a signer of the Declaration of Independence and a medical doctor. And his message was, while they were setting up the provision for religious freedom, he said, great idea, we need one for medical freedom too.
And God bless him for doing it.
Yeah. So he predicted a medical tyranny of the future.
Which is what happened, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't that what we're living in right now? So that's...
I don't understand how. Now, the Supreme Court identified that vaccines, let's see, I wrote it down, are unavoidably safe in 2011. That's a quote. Quote, unavoidably unsafe. I'm sorry if I said safe. Vaccines are, quote, unavoidably unsafe. 2011, the Supreme Court identified this. And in 2019, we're mandating those unavoidably unsafe, untested.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing proving that the safety schedule we're utilizing is safe. And in fact, in 2001, I believe it was data collected indicating that the earlier we give the MMR, the younger the age of the MMR, the increased the risk of autism. Now, this was published in 2004, but it was buried.
You know, what's interesting to me is whenever I've gone to a veterinarian, they're always like, never use multiple vaccines, always use a killed virus vaccine. You've really got to space them out. You can't give them multiple vaccine on the same day. And
we just had this happen with my, I have an 8-pound Shih Tzu.
Uh-huh.
And I took her to the vet. They gave her the rabies vax, and they said, we can't give her anything else. Mm-hmm. She's only 8 pounds. And I just thought, you know,
why can't our doctors be this enlightened?
I was blown away. There are babies who are 4 pounds, 6 pounds, mm-hmm. getting the same dose that my healthy 20-pound or healthy 16-pound baby got at 6 months. And how is nobody saying this is wrong?
And then
back to the mandates, if we can just go there for a second.
Sure.
What am I supposed to do if this bill passes?
Mm-hmm.
100% of the last 4 times I vaccinated my son, he had incredibly, all right, the last one wasn't awful and the symptoms resolved, but even that was only one vaccine.
Yeah.
100% of the last 4 times we vaccinated this child, he had significant issues. And 100% of the last 3 times we vaccinated this child, he had regressions. What am I supposed to do? Now we have to pay even more? This destroyed us. Absolutely destroyed our family. My daughter was 6 when my son, so Lily was 6 when Josh had his regression. She used to climb into my lap and cry and say, Mama, do you remember the old Josh? I'd say, yes, I do.
Aww.
And she'd weep and she'd say, Mama, I miss him. I miss him. Can we have him back?
So heartbreaking.
It was devastating. And they knew that. I think the worst part for me was they knew and nobody cared enough. And now we have nurses and doctors and high level scientists coming out and saying, speaking against vaccination and how, you know, the science is not there. But if we rewound to my experience in nursing school, we were taught that we knew the science was there, and we were taught that we knew better than the general public. We were literally taught that anti-vaxxers are idiots. That's what we were taught.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that attitude comes from. That's where, anti-vaxxer is kind of, it's just a very negative term.
Yeah, it's a slur.
It really is.
It's a slur used to perpetuate bigotry against a certain group of people. So it makes it a slur.
And once you're identified or labeled as an anti-vaxxer, forget mm-hmm. about it. Going in to obtain medical care. And I mean, it took years for us to understand what happened to our children. And how that was terrifying in and of itself, because if I know that something bad happened here, and I know that the physician who I've entrusted the care of my child to, they're not identifying that it even could happen. What do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
What happens next? Nobody can tell me what happens next. You know?
It's just really, you know, it's all about follow the money.
That's it.
In so many issues. Like this one, for example. For one thing, I find that, you know, people like you who are of the age of having young children and a family are generally more aware of this issue, sometimes through tragedy. Like the story you've been telling me, but a lot of the older generation doesn't really understand. They think it's still measles and polio, and then you're good to go. And they don't really understand how many vaccines are being pushed on young children today.
That's
and
right.
A lot of them, like the ones you were mentioning, like vaccines for STDs, are completely inappropriate to be giving to a baby who's not even going to be exposed to those illnesses.
Yep. And why just in back then, I still was very much pro-vax. Again, it just didn't make sense.
And I think they're giving them to young children because the children can't speak out.
That's it.
They can't describe how it made them feel. They can't say, oh my gosh, as soon as that hit me, my brain blanked out, because they can't say that. So what a great way to market it to people who can't speak about their experience.
And we will do anything to keep our children safe. If you tell me this is going to prevent deadly diseases, you better know I'm going to get in line.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want our kids to get sick. But now, being in the position that I'm in, and other parents are too, if these mandates do pass in Massachusetts, I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. I literally have to choose between the education of my children and their neurological integrity. There is nothing saying that my kids will. In fact, 100% of the last four times, he's gotten hurt. My son got hurt. So what do you think is going to happen if I vaccinate him a fifth time? And you can't get a medical waiver. The physicians who explained to me what happened to my son, there's more than one, it took me, again, years to find them, but those physicians are like, no, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the doctor, the pediatrician that I take them to was kind of angry when we needed a letter. We needed a letter saying, I know that this kid isn't being vaccinated. He was miffed, and we needed that to register him for public school, which by law we actually didn't, but it was easier just to give it to them than to start that argument. You know, my son needed he needed specialized care in school. And in order to get that, we had to get him registered early on. So the one thing I do want to bring up, too, is where I am. One of the things that that I've had to wrestle with is when I came out with my son's injury, this is before we knew that Lily had one, too. When I came out with that publicly, I was attacked. I was attacked by people I know and people who love me or should love me. Mm-hmm. This happened. And I'm not going to change. These are my observations. I was talked out of my observations at one point. In nursing, it's just the facts. You state exactly what happened. You don't emphasize anything. You don't minimize anything. You just tell just the facts. Tell me exactly what happened. And it makes people uncomfortable to hear. And that's too bad. But the anger that we've received, because of it, it blows my mind. What right does anybody else have to be angry? You know, I hear vaccinate your whatever kids, vaccinate your kids.
And then you have people who think that if people are not vaccinated, it's a health risk to them.
Which is, and there are studies proving otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that's the benefit of right now. Right now, all this information is available.
More and more is coming to the surface.
That's right. But one of the things that I'm noticing, for example, I sent you Dr. Zimmerman's affidavit. He's the gentleman who testified in the omnibus.
You posted that on our Medical Freedom page. There's a Facebook page for this show. The Medical Freedom Show has a picture of a little pink medical poppy on it, and that is our website for this page, and Carolyn has posted her links up there so we can take a look at that.
And some of them, definitely they're worth reviewing. There's a lot of information in there, but with Dr. Zimmerman's affidavit, I had a really hard time finding that a second time. And it, I ended up finding the link, but it was incredibly difficult to find. So a lot of the information, a lot of the links that you find, you really have to save the document, because if you look a second time, it might not be there. So, which indicates to me that, you know, maybe this stuff is being censored, which is...
Yeah, there was that movie that Robert De Niro made, Vaxxed, a documentary, and it was, I don't want to say definitively which platforms it was stripped from, but there were several platforms that it was removed from. Carolyn, unfortunately, we only have about less than 2 minutes left to our show. So again, if you have any websites, links, or resources, or any just closing statements, welcome you to share.
I will definitely, if there's anything else I find that's worth posting, most certainly I will, but I would want to leave your listeners with the thought that, you know, you can vaccinate your children if that's what you feel is best. Children who are partially vaccinated or not vaccinated, it's been proven there are no risks for that child to be in school with your child. Mm-hmm. And every child legally is entitled to a fair and appropriate education. By law, that's what they're entitled to. The Constitution does not say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for everybody who's vaccinated, for everybody who hasn't been vaccine injured. Mm-hmm. The other thought that I would ask your listeners to ponder is, if you were me and your son had been injured and the medical community had turned their back on you and this mandate came up, what would you do? What should I do?
Carolyn, thank you so much for joining our show today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Medical Freedom with Heather Martin. Very intense show today, very emotional. It's just such a tragedy for any family to have to go through this, to have to go through vaccine injury to your healthy, beautiful children. And I hope our broadcast might be part of the wave of a brighter future in which children are not being neurologically damaged. Thank you.